This is Dr. Allie Evans welcoming you to Light on Health, a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect your health and that of our entire community. My guest today is Andy Catalano, and we are going to be talking about food, which is a pretty broad topic. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you, Allie.
So, you know, one of maybe the quotes that's the most known in the food world is, and in the medicine world, is Hippocrates saying, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And that was, he was born 460 BC. So that was a heck of a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I think that's maybe the simplest statement. And I think we're maybe the furthest from that. Like if you think about 460 BC and where we are now, we actually couldn't be further from that being the truth. Maybe we're kind of circling back to that, but
I think you're right. I think we're at an interesting moment here. And just the phrase, you are what you eat, I mean, that took me until I was probably well into my 20s before it really hit home and I realized that is actually true. And it's very important what we're putting into our bodies every day. Yeah. And these days, it is very, if you don't really try and think about it, it is hard to find good, healthy food. But we're living in a very fortunate place where we're surrounded by so many small farms that are doing the hard work of growing beautiful produce and making it available locally to us. So if you do a little bit of digging, there's really some good food out there.
Yeah. It's, you know, one of my children, my son is on a swim team, and whenever we're at swim meets, it's like you get these magazines about kind of training for swim, you know, swimmers training manuals and all this, and it has menus and it has what the kids should be eating and how to eat well as an athlete. And then you go to a swim meet, and I swear at the concession stand, it's like red vines and ramen noodles and some chips and some Costco muffins. Mm-hmm. And you just think like nothing on this table is actually real food.
Right.
And the time it's taken, like from the red vines aren't grown on a farm.
They're not?
Maybe in a fantasy world. But that time it's taken to even be sellable and in front of us, it's really kind
of... You think of what has to go into something to make it be able to survive on a shelf for 6 months and still be consumable.
Right.
I know, it's not actually food. Yeah.
No, it's not food anymore. And you just think these little kids who are working so hard day in and day out to perform.
Right.
And yet they're totally sabotaging. Uh-huh. And it's so mainstream that people kind of know, but it's like, oh, well, they're selling it there. It must be okay.
Right.
You know, a Costco muffin must be an okay breakfast for a little athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to give our listeners kind of an idea of who you are and what you do and what you do in our community, give us just a sort of little intro of your story and how you ended up in Astoria. From New York City.
Sure. Yeah. I grew up in New York State, and when I was in college, I spent a semester in Italy, fell in love with the kind of the food culture there.
And your family is Italian.
I have Italian ancestry. Yeah.
Okay.
And in a nutshell, the Italian food sensibility is eat what's fresh, eat what's best at the moment, and do as little to it as possible to screw it up. You know, the farmers who are growing the food are doing the hard work of getting it from seed to harvest healthy. And the cook is really playing a secondary role of not screwing it up by the time it gets onto the plate. So I really fell in love with that sort of hyper-seasonal, simple execution approach to food. And when I graduated from college, I went back to Italy for a year through the WOOF program, which is
Workers on Organic Farms.
Yeah. A farm exchange program. And I worked on several different farms throughout the country. And on those farms, they had agriturismi, which were sort of guest houses. They offered farm holidays where you could kind of pitch in on the farm. And they had little restaurants where they cooked food harvested from the farm. And that's where I was really thrown into the kitchen. So
before you were on the farm, did you have an interest in the kitchen side of it, or were you more interested in kind of the soil side of it?
I was interested in cooking. I cooked, you know, on my own a lot through high school and college.
Just because it was fun to you?
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, and, you know, I was raised in a household with good food and, you know, home-cooked meals all the time, but never really considered it a career.
Yeah.
But when I was on those farms, actually seeing the connection between, you know, harvesting the crop and then carrying it 30 feet into the kitchen and eating it, cooking it and eating it, that connection was really, really hit home with me. So when I got back to the States, I moved to New York and got my foot in the door at a small restaurant in Brooklyn and just kind of worked my way up from there. Worked in New York for about 6 years, and then my wife and I moved to Portland and lived there for a couple of years and fell in love with the North Coast and wanted to put down roots and came out here sort of in the hopes of opening up a little restaurant. But while that dream was kind of percolating, an opportunity at Street 14 came along, and I was the chef there for a couple of years, where I set up a dinner service that was all locally sourced. The menu changed every week, and highlighted whatever was kind of beautiful at the moment from the farms around us. And I did that for a couple of years. That ended about a year ago, at which point I started a small local food business only because I wanted to keep in touch. I wanted to keep working with the farmers that I had gotten to know during my time at Street 14. I wanted to be able to offer the local consumer beautiful local food that is being grown around us that is rather difficult to access otherwise. I wasn't ready to open up my own restaurant, so I decided to do this business called Elemento, which is a meal kit. So every week I will put together three recipes, source the ingredients for those recipes from the farms around us, and pre-portion it, pack it all in reusable containers in a grocery bag, and that's the meal kit for the week. It changes every week with what's fresh and seasonal.
And it's I know I've seen ads all over Facebook and various things for these meal kits, but you're getting, you know, Blue Apron or whatever.
Yeah, there are a lot out there.
Kits are. And I think it's really speaking to the need for people to have convenience. Like, they'd still like to cook a meal for their family or for themselves, but they don't want to have to do all the work
of it's a daunting,
conceptualizing it and going and getting the ingredients and doing all the prep work and putting it together.
And
what you offer, especially for all of us, is, let's do that, and let's do it one step up. Let's get it directly from the farms, and let's get the freshest, healthiest meals we can put together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it is a daunting task to try to get dinner on the table every day if you're starting from zero every day.
Yeah.
It's hard. And, you know, I only have one child, and I have a relatively forgiving schedule, but even for me, it's difficult to come up with something new every day. So, what these meal kits do is give you that kind of head start, and you're working with, you know, the freshest produce around, which makes all the difference. I think, you know, you can easily overthink a meal, like we were talking about before. But if you start with the best ingredients, they're delicious on their own. You have to do very little to them to make a good dinner.
And like you said, the Italian chef with this, it's really get the freshest produce and don't mess it up.
And get out of the way.
And get out of the way.
Yeah.
Which I think is so opposite to where, I mean, gosh, we watch the Food Network and we see these magazines and you kind of look at the images. It's almost like looking at models and then holding yourself to that standard. It's the same thing with this food.
Cooking has definitely been fetishized. And it's not a glamorous activity. It's something that is fundamental to life. I mean, you are what you eat.
And
I think it should be a part of everyone's life. It shouldn't be a job. It shouldn't be a chore that you have to come up with a meal for that night. It should be a joyful, you know, celebration.
And that, what you said is so, I've been thinking about this so much. It's like, how do you take something that really takes up a huge majority of the day eating, you know, just three meals a day plus snacks and keeping, you know, obviously from the medical side, keeping your blood sugar even. But how do we inject the joy back into it? Because I think it gets so daunting. And I know it's like, you know, sometimes I find myself in the kitchen and I'm thinking like, oh, I'm going to make this, but I'm literally thinking about, well, I don't want to use too many pots and pans because I'm going to have to clean it up.
Yeah.
And that's more work. And so just this, how do we inject the joy and really simplify it to the point, like you said, where you kind of let the food, you know, you're just transforming it a bit.
Yeah.
So well, that it's...
I think one way of getting that joy back in the experience of cooking is if you think about two realistic and very different experiences of shopping for food is, you know, the Safeway or Costco or the grocery store, prepackaged, you know, pre-chopped kale that was picked in Mexico or in California. And
like 2 weeks ago.
Weeks ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, been sitting in a refrigerated facility, trucked up to Portland, trucked out, you know, sitting on the shelf for who knows how long. And by the time you taste it, it doesn't taste good.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't taste like food anymore.
Right.
Versus signing up for a local CSA, shopping at the co-op, which does a great job of highlighting local producers, and getting a bunch of kale that was picked that morning or the night before. It's a totally different product.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that in itself goes a long way towards getting excited about food again.
Right.
And just, you can taste the difference.
Yeah. And I think also something that we've talked about is just this idea of simplifying, you know, like honoring the simplicity in cooking, that it doesn't need to be this gigantic 5-course meal from start to finish, or this beautiful photo-worthy cover of Food Network magazine.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the simplest of things, and really to go in the kitchen and take that head of kale and make, you know, put a half cup of quinoa in a pan that's done in 7 minutes and throw some beans in it is, I mean, that's a meal you'd get at a restaurant. It just doesn't feel glamorous. It doesn't feel like, you know.
Yeah.
But just, I think that idea of really simplifying so that people can, it's okay to be very, very simple and
start
to enjoy that simplicity.
Start with the best ingredients and get out of their way.
Yeah.
You know, I have a few kind of pantry essentials that I use all the time. I use a lot of olive oil, which is not locally sourced, but I use a lot of olive oil
and
a lot of
everywhere around here.
And a lot of lemon juice, neither of which come locally, but
sure.
But those two things, you know, a little bit of good fat and a little bit of acid really, you know, brighten up a dish and make it delicious. You can take a pan of kale, sauteed kale, drizzle it with olive oil, squeeze some lemon juice on it, and you've got a delicious meal.
What are your other kind of pantry staple?
Good salt. I use Jacobson kosher salt.
When you cook or on top of what you make?
Both. Yeah. I use the kosher salt when I cook, and the flake finishing
top.
Salt on top. Seasoning with, you know, food with salt. Everything should get salt.
Yeah.
I think a lot of home cooks under season and overcook their food.
Yeah.
I think those are probably the two biggest
mistakes. People got so scared of salt with high blood pressure, and then it just sort of stayed forever. You know, I see these trends in medicine. You and I were talking about this, where oftentimes we'll talk to people about a diet that their body, going on a diet that decreases what they're sensitive to in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we might test for some food sensitivities and they'll take those foods out. But what they don't do is evolve, meaning they're not looking at, okay, that was one snapshot in time. Where is my body at now? And what feels okay to eat now, and evolve with it. Instead, we get so stagnant with, oh, fat is bad or salt is bad. Salt is in every one of our cells. Our cells literally don't work without salt.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're cooking real food at home, there's no salt in it. So it's not like buying, you know, prepackaged food in the grocery store.
That's right.
Any salt that is in that food, you have to add to it.
That's right.
And without it, it's going to taste okay, but it's going to taste a heck of a lot better with a little bit of salt. It's going to pull out a lot of the natural flavor. So I use good salt. That's very important.
Yeah.
And that, you know, honestly, in terms of seasoning in my pantry, salt, olive oil, and acid.
Yeah.
I use good vinegars. I use lemon juice.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So talk us through a little bit. I think there's some words we're using that I want to define for people, and I want to sort of empower the shopper to know what they're buying. So when we're talking about like local, when we're talking about sustainable, when we're talking about organic, when we're talking about kind of these words that we see a lot on our packaging. Mm-hmm. Talk us through someone who typically, let's start with like someone who's going to go shop at Safeway, for example, mm-hmm. and buy produce there. Where is that coming from? What are they buying? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, what's that experience and what are they buying and where is it coming from?
Sure. Well, first of all, you're not buying local food.
Right. So when you're buying, you know, you go in to buy a head of romaine from there, mm-hmm. even if it's organic, it's coming from
It was grown in
California,
Central Valley of California.
Yeah.
Or Mexico, more likely.
Uh-huh.
And if it was organic, then it was grown without the use of pesticides.
Which
but
does not mean that it was grown anywhere near here. It just means we didn't put chemicals on it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of pretty nasty
organic things,
fertilizers and, uh-huh. yeah, things that you can add. So organic's great. It's a great place to start, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
And honestly, these terms are thrown around a lot, and they're very confusing. And
they are confusing.
A lot of times they're in conflict, and I find it nearly impossible to untangle it all.
Yeah.
But the way I get around having to untangle it is just to
buy from a farm.
Buy from a farm, because not all of our farms around here, in fact, most of them are not certified organic.
Right.
But that's just because it's expensive.
That's right. And that's a really important point. I think for people to understand that, because especially when you're looking at very local produce on a small farm.
Yeah. I mean, these farms are
costs them a ton of money to actually have the organic label.
Yes.
Yeah.
These farms are not even family farms. They're usually one person, two person farms.
Right.
And it's a ton of work. I have a little garden, and I can barely keep up with it myself.
Right.
I can't imagine how, you know, one or two people can have, you know, 4 acres of vegetables.
Right.
Let alone have to try to engage in that bureaucracy of getting organic certification.
Absolutely.
But I can say that all the farms I work with anyway around here go well beyond organic.
Right. They're hyper organic.
Yes, it's it's the best food you can consume.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the labels and how to just avoid that confusion. You know, local farms, they go beyond organic. They're obviously local. It's the freshest food you can get. It hasn't traveled anywhere. It hasn't been packaged, sitting in a facility, trucked up here.
When you see a label that says local, is there a limit in mileage? Like, is there sort of an understanding of it's local because it's within X amount of miles of where we are?
Or? As a consensus? Or in I think it's it's unregulated completely.
Got it. So someone can say local and it's made in the United
could be grown,
States.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
More likely if you go to a big supermarket and it says it's, you know, local section, it's maybe grown in Northern California or Idaho.
Yeah.
Or grown, or it could be a tropical crop like coffee that is maybe roasted locally.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of opacity in the distribution chain and kind of where ingredients come from.
And here we've got the ability to go to places to buy. So we've got the co-op, which sources local produce.
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough how great the co-op is for our community. I mean, it's such a resource to have.
And so, you know, looking at sort of if we're empowering our listeners to be able to go shop for things that are local, mm-hmm. their options are the farmers markets in the when it's in season.
Yes. Yes, there are a lot of farmers markets in the county. CSAs are a great way to go.
Yeah.
I think all the farms I work with offer CSAs, and they're flexible too. I mean, a lot of people maybe are hesitant to or reluctant to start a CSA because they think they'll be inundated with a lot of things that they can't use.
Like 20 pounds of eggplant and
exactly.
they won't know what to do with it.
Exactly. Yeah. But I know that at least several of the CSAs locally let you choose what you want that week.
Right.
They send you an availability list and you pick out what you want, and they have different, you know, formats for two people or a whole family.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best way to get that produce. If that's not available to you, then the co-op is a wonderful option. And there are farmers markets during the high season in the summer. I think probably every day of the week between here and down to Cannon Beach, there's a farmer's market.
Do you, you know, living in New York and living in Italy, obviously, and living here in Portland, do you feel like we're in a place where we're kind of lucky in how much is available?
Yeah, we're extremely fortunate.
I don't think everyone knows. I mean, we know that we have seafood and we know that we have some farms, but I don't think everyone here realizes.
This is an amazing place for food. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just cooked a delicious spring Chinook salmon last weekend, which is, I mean, it's the best salmon in the world. And
yeah.
It was caught in Young's Bay. And then, yeah, produce-wise, we have a temperate climate, temperate maritime climate. We can grow leafy greens year-round. We can, yeah, farmers can grow things 12 months a year,
right,
which is very unusual. Our summers are mild. Our winters are mild. So it's just kind of the perfect, yeah, the perfect climate.
So I want to ask you, take off your chef hat for a minute and just have on like a I'm just a human dad husband parent. How do you kind of think about like meal planning, or how do you kind of come up with an idea of like what am I going to make for dinner?
It can be hard, but it doesn't have to be. I usually have a lot of produce leftovers from Alimento meal kits. So I have a place to start. I have an ingredient to start with.
The type that'll look in the fridge, see what you have,
yes,
and kind of conceptualize what am I doing
with
this.
That's the only way I know how to cook. I can't cook from recipes.
Yeah.
I've tried and I can't do it.
Yeah.
I have to see an ingredient and then see what else I have
it.
and just try to make it tasty. I like to do big batches of things that have multiple applications. Like I'll make a big pot of beans on Sunday, and then, you know, we'll have beans and greens on Monday. We'll have tacos on Tuesday. We'll have soup on Wednesday. You know, things like that where you have kind of a standard ingredient that you can take in a lot of different directions with a little bit of tweaks with, you know, different seasonings or different additions to it.
A lot of the talk of sort of this future diet health-wise, when they're looking at diabetes and heart disease and some of these really massive chronic diseases that have a really high mortality, the diet of the future has been dubbed beans and greens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So a very plant-based, high in good protein and high in vegetables and produce. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, legumes are magical. I mean, yeah, they're filling. They have good fats,
good fiber,
good proteins. Yep.
Yeah.
And then again, leafy greens, they grow 12 months a year around here, so you never run out of the source material.
Something that you said too that I have been thinking about is this idea of eating seasonally. I think we live in a culture where you can get any, you know, you can get any kind of produce you're looking for pretty much any time of year, even though it's not even grown anywhere remotely near that time.
Yeah.
But I think when I look at from a health basis and looking at kind of this idea of doing a rotation diet where we're not getting the same thing all the time that our immune system starts to react to, that idea is so interesting that ancestrally eating seasonally is part of what avoided having these reactions to foods.
That does the work for you.
It does, yeah.
I think that's probably, for me, when it comes to getting dinner on the table and just coming up with an idea, that infinite variety is the hardest part, is the most daunting aspect of cooking for me.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Because it's just, if you have no parameters, then where do you even begin?
Boundless.
That's why seasonal cooking, another reason why seasonal cooking is so great is because it gives you those boundaries, those parameters, especially in our kind of...
And it's not a blank canvas. It's here, we're starting with this, go from there.
And we have a very gently kind of evolving year in terms of what's available. So every 2 weeks, you know, you'll have slight changes in what's available. There's not four distinct seasons. It's just kind of a, you know, gentle progression throughout the year.
Right.
And that'll always, you know, tweak what you have available a little bit.
Yeah. So can we play a quick game?
Sure.
That you can put your chef hat back on for okay. this game. Okay, so let's do like a brainstorming. I'm going to say an ingredient and you just tell me what comes to mind. It can be very stream of consciousness, but just ideas that come to mind or ideas to do with.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Ready.
How about sweet potatoes?
Sweet potatoes. Well, it's sunny and it's going to be sunny and 70 today. So sweet potatoes, I would think I would probably briefly steam them just to get them cooked a little bit. And then toss them in olive oil, garlic, put them on the grill.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I'd have the grill going because it's a summer day today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have other things to go on the grill.
Don't we define summer as over 60
this is
on
summer.
The coast?
This yeah, is high absolutely. Summer right now. Yeah, I don't care if it's going to be cold and rainy tomorrow. This is summer. Yeah, get them on the grill, get them nice and dark, and then squeeze a lime juice, cilantro. That's
sounds,
how I like to eat sweet potatoes.
Oh, that sounds yeah. great. Okay, how about mushroom broth?
Noodles, I think of pasta right away.
Pasta like Italian style, not...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
thinking rice noodles, but
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that too. Yeah, that's just kind of where my head goes,
yeah.
is to Italy and to northern Italy
and you
with
would
mushrooms.
Boil, you would do pasta, boil it in the mushroom broth, or
I would probably cook it.
Cook
it uh-huh. in, cook it separately in boiling salted water and then add it to the broth with maybe some green onions, some... chopped up Swiss chard, maybe a little poached egg on top.
Yum. And would it be like you serve it with a good amount of broth or it's just
no just kind
it?
Of to wet
got
the
it.
Noodles yeah
got it
yeah
okay
kinda
how
like
about
a, yeah, yeah.
oh no go ahead
no go ahead next one.
How about radish?
Radishes, I love radishes. Gosh, there are so many different ways to eat radishes, but the best way, if you get good local fresh radishes with the greens still on them, I temper some butter, smear it on a board, good coarse salt, and that's it. I dip my radish in the butter, sprinkle it with salt, and eat it.
Yum. I just had a radishes that were cooked in brown butter
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
were delicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've had roasted radishes that were like maybe yeah. the best radishes I've ever
really?
Had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, throw them on the grill.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to just put everything mm-hmm. on the grill today. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do one more. How about, this is not a staple, but I'm curious where your brain goes with it. How about nutritional yeast?
Actually, just.
That is a staple.
Well, I used to sprinkle it on popcorn. I've gone through a lot of different diets. Sarah and I have gone through a lot of different diets over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were vegetarian for a while. And we got into nutritional yeast,
mm-hmm.
sprinkle it on popcorn. But also, actually just yesterday I made these kind of quinoa tacos. I had a bunch of leftover quinoa. So I mix it with some salsa, a lot of nutritional yeast to give it that kind of
like cheesy,
meaty umami.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and just baked it in a low oven. And it actually comes out tasting or giving, satisfying in a way that kind of meat, taco meat does.
Yeah.
But it's quinoa and yeast and salsa.
Yeah.
So that's one way. That's maybe not
we had,
everybody's
my daughter had
choice,
eggs. She likes eggs scrambled and like cooked into a super thin kind of omelet.
Mm-hmm.
And I always take the eggs and just add everything into it before I cook it. And so I had salt, pepper, basil, and a good amount of nutritional yeast and
yeah.
just cooked it like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that tonight.
Right. So before we go, tell us just a little bit about your business and how people could find out more about it. And
sure.
I know you said it's is it a standard meal plan that's three a week? It's sort
so
of
so it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I at the beginning of it, I really wanted to be able to accommodate all sorts of food aversions, allergies, different parameters. It's been difficult with just local food logistics, but I still am very willing to talk to people about what
yeah.
sort of foods they want to have or can't have. But the
people
meal,
I find are pretty adaptable too. Once they know what they can't have, they kind of know how
yeah.
to substitute.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
But the meal, I mean, the meal kit, there is a standard meal kit available every Friday. There's a lot of information available on the website AlimentoAstoria.com.
And it's A-L-I-M-E-N-T-O.
Yes.
Astoria.
Yes.
.com.
Yes.
And is that the best place to contact
you? Yes, that's the best way to contact me. And you can also sign up there for the weekly newsletter that I send out, which details the contents of the upcoming kit.
Oh, great.
And often highlights a farm or an ingredient or things like that.
Great. Any last closing thoughts? Final parting words?
Well, we're getting into the season now when it's going to be easy to just eat fresh, raw food. You don't have to do anything to it.
We're kind of coming out of the food hibernation.
Yeah, it's been tough these last few weeks, especially. It's the time of year where you look outside and it seems like everything should be flourishing and there should be plenty of food options. But it's kind of tough that the storage crops are done, the overwintered greens have flowered, and everything that's going to be available in about a month is still, 3 inches out of the ground.
Right.
And not nearly ready for harvest. So it's a little tricky time, but there's salad greens and there's, tender little baby greens and radishes and things like that coming up.
So what he's saying is everyone come out of hiding and
yes,
the food will be ready for you.
It will be ready.
To prepare. You're listening to Coast Community Radio. I have had the pleasure of talking with Andy Catalano, and I hope we've all inspired you to get out there in the sunshine and grill some delicious food and take one more step towards your own radiant health. Thank you to Andy. Thanks for being on the show. And
thank
a very you. Special thank you to Joanne Rideout for engineering for me. I hope you all have a great day in the sunshine.